Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the pantograph of Friday, March 21st, 2025. We begin with page one, where the main story is headlined, Springtime to See the Clean. Local pros ready to motivate and tackle tough jobs this season. This story is datelined Bloomington. While the first day of spring this year brought cold weather and even a dusting of snow, the sunshine and promise of warm weather ahead may have residents energized to clean the spaces they have been dreading for months. Whether you are looking to tackle projects indoors or out, or do a whole house declutter, Bloomington Normal has a number of businesses ready to share their spring cleaning know-how and even take on the tasks for you. Gabby Lersch, manager of Bloomington-based Routine Clean Central Illinois, started her business nearly 4 years ago, specializing in janitorial and commercial cleaning for office spaces and businesses, as well as for residential houses and moving in and moving out cleans. The business mainly serves the Twin Cities, but it has worked in surrounding areas such as Hudson and Towanda. "I just really enjoyed cleaning, and I found it as a way to help people out," Lersch said. "It started small scale with me cleaning houses here and there, and when I realized I could make this into a business, I've been doing that ever since." Lersch said she's been cleaning since she was young, and as a kid even asked her mom if she could clean the bathroom. "It's kind of therapeutic for me. I don't necessarily enjoy cleaning for myself. I like cleaning for other people. It gives me the satisfaction," she said. Businesses and homeowners have been reaching out to her more now that winter is over, she said, with many looking for deep cleans of fascia, floorboards, windows, and other hard-to-reach areas. "I would say, number one, always start with decluttering, getting rid of things you don't use or need that are collecting dust, she said. "Do one thing or room at a time. You don't have to tackle it all in one day. Instead of just thinking of it as a cleaning task, you can organize and clean things as you go. I think that makes it a little more fun." Lersch said her business typically does commercial cleans at night and residential in the morning, but is essentially available 24/7. Routine Clean can be reached at 309-386-3040 or via facebook.com/routineclean central ill. Melanie Always of Normal has also been a self-employed cleaner, organizer, and personal shopper for 15 years, but first started cleaning when she was in junior high. She said she started out cleaning a couple of homes in a local church and continued through high school. During college, she cleaned a few houses to help pay for expenses. And now, through her business, she serves residential homes as well as small businesses. "I enjoy cleaning because I like helping others who cannot clean anymore the way they would like it done or don't have time to do it," she said. "Attention to detail while cleaning is one of the most important things, that everything is wiped down or cleaned in the appropriate manner. Spring is a good time to wipe down walls, wood trim, doors, interior windows, and window treatments," she said. As for general cleaning tips, she recommends having the right type of cleaning cloths and products for a specific job, which usually helps make the cleaning go by faster. She said it's also important to use a storage space to its fullest potential by using the right types of containers or baskets and labeling everything. "A simple mixture of vinegar and water is great to clean many items," she said. And she can be reached via email at m_alwes@yahoo.com. Kobe Joe, an Illinois State University senior and TikTok personality with over 50,000 followers, started cleaning as a sophomore in college. He grew up in a small town outside of Springfield and always considered himself a hustler, he said, selling slime or loom rubber bracelets or working at the school supply store and concession stands. He learned how to clean through his friend's Cardio Clean business, he said, where he gained experience cleaning residential homes and Airbnbs and managing a team of 3 to 5 people cleaning 2 to 4 houses a day, 5 days a week. While Kobe Joe's social media pages mainly consist of travel content, he occasionally makes cleaning TikToks. A recent TikTok showed him completing a commercial clean, including shampooing the floors and cleaning the walls, at a local business with 3 office rooms, a bathroom, and a kitchen. Toilets, he laughed, are the one thing he doesn't really like to clean. When you do a move-out clean, so whenever a new tenant moves in, that's one of the cleans I really like to do, he said. The hoarder cleans, the before and after. There's just nothing like that. It's the picture coming together, completely changing someone's life. And what does he enjoy about cleaning? I like to run around and pick up the stuff and organize. I've always kind of liked doing that kind of stuff, he said. I'd ask my grandma, can I wash your windows? Do little chores around the house, help people, make money, and support myself. Of his best tips for keeping a clean space, Kobe Joe said when people go shopping, they need to think about where they will put any new items in their home, as everything needs to have a place. If they cannot figure that out in the store, he said, they should not bring the item home, as many times it will just be another thing that ends up in a junk drawer where it goes to die and be forgotten about. In addition to being a full-time student, Kobe Joe cleans about 2 houses a week and keeps up with his other side hustles like dog walking, DoorDash, Instacart, and social media. He currently manages 3 different Instagram accounts, but soon plans to create a cleaning-specific account called Kobe Joe Cleans. His videos can be found on TikTok at Kobe Joe or on the Instagram page Kobe Joe Deliveries. Kobe Joe said he plans to do more cleaning this spring and summer once school is over. He cleans houses in his hometown, too. I've done a few cleaning videos. I've just really been doing it on the back end. If I have an opportunity to make a video, I will, he said. To be able to put the clips together, that's going to set me apart from other people who are going other places to clean because they're going to be able to see the clean. Those interested in Kobe Joe services can reach out to him via social media. Muhammad Salih, owner of Evergreen Cleaning Services in Bloomington, started cleaning nearly 15 years ago. He is originally from Dubai and did cleaning work there before getting married to his wife and settling in Bloomington. Salih runs the business with help from his family, offering commercial, residential, individual, and spring cleaning, and move-out, move-in cleaning for real estate agents. He said they have some clients they see on a daily or weekly basis, including many older clients who are unable to complete certain tasks on their own. The business even offers a springtime special, with tasks like washing baseboards, windows and treatments, inside and out, ceilings, doors, vents, more vacuuming, and dusting blinds, which Salih said is something people tend to forget about. Every client has different needs, he added. We get more frequent calls in spring from families. They want their home to be dusted and mopped, all nice and clean. Most of them have spots they can't reach. Most of the people don't have time to do it or have health issues, he said, and we really enjoy it because they ask for it and are happy with our service. He said he enjoys cleaning for a living as it keeps him moving, and he often reaches 20,000 steps a day. Some of his best tips include organizing shelves and cabinets to maximize storage, recycling unneeded items, using furniture that can serve multiple purposes, using similar-looking boxes and containers, grouping things together, and making sure there's enough room for everything. He also recommends that as soon as you're done using an item, put it back where it is meant to be stored. For services, customers can contact info@evergreencleaningservices.com and can expect a response within 24 hours. Our next front page story is about education, titled Trump Moves Worry Teachers. District 87 union leader decries plan to end Department of Education. This story is datelined Bloomington. President Donald Trump's directive to dismantle the U.S. Education Department began raising alarm among area teachers even before the White House announced his plan to sign an executive order to that effect on Thursday. The order, which had not been signed as of press time, was expected to direct Secretary Linda McMahon to take all necessary steps to facilitate the closure of the Department of Education and return education authority to the states while continuing to ensure the effective and uninterrupted delivery of services, programs, and benefits on which Americans rely, according to the White House. Trump's action will make the department much smaller than it is today, but it will continue managing federal student loans and Pell Grants, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said Thursday. Other critical department duties, such as enforcement of civil rights, will remain, she said, but she did not say how they will be fulfilled. The great responsibility of education, educating our nation's students, will return to the states, Leavitt told reporters on Thursday. The department sends billions of dollars a year to schools and oversees a $1.6 trillion in federal student loans. The president had previously pledged to dismantle the department, which he characterized as wasteful and polluted by liberal ideology. On Wednesday, teachers at Bloomington District 87 shared their concerns about what ending the department could mean. We are very concerned that changes at the federal level will impact some of our most vulnerable students and families, said Bloomington Education Association President Julie Riley, speaking after she addressed the Bloomington District 87 board during its meeting Wednesday night at Bloomington High School. We cannot afford a hit to public education. At the time the meeting was going on, but unknown to those there, the Associated Press reported Trump plans to sign an executive order Thursday to abolish the cabinet-level agency that guides school protocols and funding, both public and private. Wearing a bright red BEA cardigan, Riley told the board about a national walk-in movement that occurred Wednesday morning, in which educators and administrators across the state and country arrived to work early to show their support for public education. They also are worried about funding restrictions and efforts to bar diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, she said. It is unprecedented, Riley told the board. Obviously, you would agree with me because you have run multiple times to be on the board. You come here month after month and sometimes are yelled at by folks. You believe in public education. You know that when our schools are strong, our communities are strong. And so I just want to make sure that you do see that your employees believe in what you are doing. Board members do not respond to statements made during public comment. The lion's share of funding for public education comes from local and state agencies, but the things that do come from the federal level are some of our most important things, such as our protections for special education students, our protections for all students, civil rights, Riley said after the meeting. We have a great many students who eat two meals a day at our schools. If the federal school lunch program were to be diminished, we would have children who would literally be going hungry. Riley asked those present to take advantage of any relationships you have with other governmental bodies and as individuals to reach out to our federal leaders, our congressional leaders, our Senate leaders, some of whom obviously are more friendly to public education than others, some of whom probably need to hear from constituents to encourage them to break from their lockstep following of the current administration. After the meeting, Riley stressed the need for federal backing for meals, special education, speech therapy, bilingual programs, counseling services, transportation, and other programs that school districts may not be able to fund from other sources. Already, Trump's Republican administration has been gutting the agency. Its workforce is being slashed in half, and there have been deep cuts to the Office for Civil Rights and the Institute of Education Sciences, which gathers data on the nation's academic progress. Advocates for public schools said eliminating the department would leave children behind in an American education system that is fundamentally unequal. Asked how she would respond to those who support such a move, Riley said, "I would be curious why they'd be comfortable with taking resources away from children. That is really what it is. I know that sometimes the public is worried about bureaucracies, but really the programs that the Department of Education is in charge of are all for the children. They are for making kids able to learn to the best of their ability, regardless of their zip code or their parents' income." While Trump can, in effect, shut down the department, dismantling it outright is likely impossible without an act of Congress, which created it in 1979. Currently, much of the agency's work revolves around managing money. Both its extensive student loan portfolio and a range of aid programs for colleges and school districts, from school meals to support for homeless students. The agency also plays a significant role in overseeing civil rights enforcement. Federal funding makes up a relatively small portion of public school budgets, roughly 14%. The money often supports supplemental programs for vulnerable students, such as the McKinney-Vento program for homeless students or Title I for low-income schools. Colleges and universities are more reliant on money from Washington through research grants, along with federal financial aid that helps students pay their tuition. Republicans talked about closing the education department for decades, saying it wastes taxpayer money and inserts the federal government into decisions that should fall to states and schools. The idea gained popularity recently as conservative parents groups demanded more authority over their children's schooling. And our last front page story is about District 87, titled "School Site Renamed for Browns," Dateline, Bloomington. Honoring two late pillars of the community, Bloomington District 87's Board of Education has named its newest facility the Willie G. and Gloria Brown Education Center. The board approved a resolution to rename the building at 2309 East Oakland Avenue that is being renovated to house the district's pre-K and Bloomington Career Academy at its regular meeting March 19th, a move that two of the Browns' three adult children called overwhelming. "It is just amazing to us," Michael Brown said. "When we were growing up, I don't know if we ever imagined that this day would be in front of us, right? They were just mom and dad." However, naming an educational facility that will serve the youngest students and those transitioning into a career field is in lockstep with their parents' values, said Michelle Honore. "It goes back to just both of our parents' belief in finding ways to always make the next generation better and to have an opportunity to lift somebody up when you can," she said. In 2024, District 87 purchased the building, formerly known as the Oakland Avenue Building, from State Farm, where Willie Brown worked for nearly four decades, for about $4.5 million. Work is ongoing in the 250,000-square-foot space to bring technical and vocational training in as early as this fall. After Willie Brown died in 2022, the board began thinking of ways to honor his lasting impact on District 87, said board member Bridget Gibson. Both Willie and Gloria Brown graduated from Bloomington High School in 1966, and Willie was inducted into the District 87 Hall of Fame in 2007, Gibson said. "He has been a part of our district legacy, and then with that building, I mean, he was an executive in that building, so it felt like a real match to honor him this way," she said. Superintendent David Mauser also said naming the building for Willie and Gloria Brown is a way to celebrate their lasting legacy and reaffirm our community's commitment to education and service. While many remember Willie Brown for his many philanthropic contributions in the Twin Cities and McLean County, Michael Brown wanted to make sure people remembered their mother as well, he said, so he urged the school district to include her name on the building. "Dad would not have been able to do the things that he was able to do later on in life with his philanthropic giving whether that was his time or treasure, without Mom, he said. Gloria Brown was the one who kept the family grounded while her husband was building his career, Honoré said. She was the boss of everything, really, and our real support system while Dad was out there making his career at State Farm, she said. Gloria was the one who keeping us solidified here. She made sure stuff got done here. And that included getting an education, she said. Gloria didn't go to college, so it was kind of really important for her that we had that education, she said. But the opportunities through the Bloomington Career Academy offer more options for students besides college, something their father championed in his later years, Michael Brown said. Individuals that are at a stage in their life where they're saying college may not be for me, but I may want to do something, auto mechanic, plumbing, cook, something like that, and it doesn't take me going to school to learn that trade. He would be very, very happy with that. That would be pretty cool to him, Michael Brown said. Still, Willie Brown would have been too humble to accept this recognition, his children said. It's not necessary, Honoré said, imitating her father as her brother laughed. We don't have to do all that. Yet, naming this facility that will educate future generations for many years to come helps to carry on their parents' legacies and instill their ideas in the young, Michael Brown said. This is something that's going to be put in stone, so to speak, for individuals that walk into that building, individuals that graduate out of that building, and individuals that drive by and maybe want to know more about that building, and maybe know a little bit more about Willie and Gloria Brown. That is pretty big for an African American in Bloomington Normal with his family to be recognized that way, he said. And we move now to some local and state news. This story is headlined, BHS to limit cell phone use, Dateline Bloomington. Bloomington High School students would only be allowed access to their cell phones during their lunch period and before and after school hours, starting this fall, if a proposed policy is adopted. The Bloomington District 87 School Board heard the proposal as part of a second reading of a 2025-26 student handbook update during its meeting Wednesday, March 19th at the high school. The high school has asked for something to be done to give some board-guided handbook policy to the disallowance of cell phones within the academic day, said Michael Cornelli, Chief Financial and Facilities Officer for the district. So, should a teacher allow a student to utilize a cell phone? Absolutely fine, but for the rest of the day, they really need to be in a secure location, he said. Bloomington High School Principal Tim Moore planned to send an email to parents Thursday morning explaining the changes, which are expected to be adopted. The Pantograph obtained a copy of the email text. In part, Moore's email will say students will be able to use their cell phones freely before 7:30 a.m., during the lunch period, and after 2:15 p.m. He's also going to do a student announcement Thursday morning. I'm sure they'll be thrilled about that, said Superintendent David Mauser. Board member Bridget Gibson asked for clarification on what a secure location is for students' cell phones. Mauser said it's supposed to be off and out of sight. Another addition to the new student handbook, it addresses spectator behavior at sporting events anywhere in the district, Cornelli said. Athletic director, high school principal, junior high principal, we all sat down, worked through a policy with some specifics in there and some what-ifs. If you do this, this is a potential which could happen to you, he said. The board also heard from Nicole Rummel, Assistant Superintendent of Teaching and Learning, about a new program for younger students that encourages learning through supervised playtime. For the past year and a half, pre-K and kindergarten teachers and their students have been part of a play-based learning group, which is backed by academic and field research, she said. Our youngest learners need to be playing, Rumble said. It develops them cognitively better, and what the research says is we let our kids play, purposeful play, right in the earlier period. You have better academic outcomes later. They are better developed socially, emotionally. They are better problem solvers. Rummel showed the board a video presentation with clips of students learning the processes of the post office and a veterinarian's clinic through play. Students learned how to navigate complex issues and share duties and task completion, all while learning the academic basics. Their executive functioning is better developed, and they're better critical thinkers, Rummel said. It is better for our multilingual students. It is better for vocabulary development. Similar play-based learning programs will be implemented as the spring semester continues and further integrated in the new school year, she said. And this story is headlined, Cheer and Chess Teams at Evans Praised. Dateline Normal. Evans Junior High's competitive cheer squad and chess teams were given special recognition for their successful seasons during the McLean County Unit 5 Board of Education's Wednesday meeting. During Good News Reports, which is where student achievements are highlighted, Evans Principal Kimberly Martin Boyd said the cheer squad earned 3 first-place wins, 1 second-place finish, and 2 third-place finishes over the season, thanks to the direction of Coach Gabby Ingham. This culminated in a 5th-place finish at the Illinois Elementary School Association state competitions. This was the first year that Evans participated in competitive cheer, which Martin Boyd said made their achievement even more impressive. We are so proud of these students represented Eagle Nation throughout their season, truly showing others how to be the good, Martin Boyd wrote in a letter to the board. The Evans chess team also won many tournaments throughout its season. It also managed to win the Illinois K-8 tournament at Illinois State University, Martin Boyd said. In addition to 3 team plaques, the chess team also earned 15 individual medals. The 6th grade team had 6 bronze medalists, the 7th grade team had 3 bronze medalists and 1 silver, and the 8th grade team had 2 bronze medalists, 1 silver, and 2 joint gold medalists. Martin Boyd said these accomplishments also help spread the school's message to be the good. And Streeter Fest set for July 31st to August 3rd. Streeter Fest will return this year from July 31st to August 3rd at North Point Plaza in Streeter. This year's musical acts will include Quiet Riot, Brittany Fox and 80s Bush on Thursday, July 31st, Aaron Lewis and the Stateliners, Sterling Elsa and To Be Announced Act on Friday, August 1st, Theory of a Dead Man, 10 Years and Revel in Red on Saturday, August 2, and the Eric Church Experience and Tennessee Whiskey, Reckon Dixie, Banda Cerro Azul de Chicago, and Grupo Cadencia on Sunday, August 3rd. The festival also includes food vendors, a beer garden, carnival rides and games, and Sunday night fireworks. New this year, alcohol wristbands will be free for anyone 21 and over, and while parking and admission to the festival itself are free, concert admission will be $10 in advance on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The concert on Sunday are free. VIP party pit tickets are available for a closer view by the stage and include an exclusive lanyard, private restrooms, and bars. 3-day festival ticket packages are also available at a discounted rate. Tickets go on sale at 8 a.m. Friday and can be purchased at streeterfest.com. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part 1 of the Pantograph of Friday, March 21st, 2025. I look forward to reading part 2 with you next.